Hi, I'm Karen Webster, and welcome to The Matchmaker Is In. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Xander Pease, the co-founder at Nomad Health. Xander, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So a quick bit of background for those listening. Nomad is a platform that matches freelance clinical workers, so doctors and nurses primarily, with institutions that need their services. It's a fascinating business and clearly in an industry that is going through its own transformation and evolution, lots to talk about. So Xander, let's start with something very, very basic. How big is the market for freelance doctors and nurses?
So across physicians, nurses, and mid-levels, it's a $15 billion market annually. The locum tenens business, which is temporary placement for doctors, is about $4 billion, and nursing between travel nursing, which is generally longer term, and per diem, which is generally within a hospital's own pool of nurses, is about $7 billion in aggregate.
So it's a big market for sure. When you were thinking about how to improve the efficiency of matching these clinicians with institutions, what was the friction that you observed, and therefore, what friction did you remove?
So it's helpful to explain how the industry currently works or worked before Nomad. So going back a couple decades now, there have been healthcare-specific brokers that make those introductions and facilitate those transactions. And that's a wide range of types of organization. There are a couple billion-dollar or multi-hundred-million-dollar companies, but also an extremely long tail of smaller shops. So, for example, 10 people that only do psychiatry in Ohio. And the market operates like a lot of our economy did pre-LinkedIn, for example. So if you're a hospital and you want to find a doctor, you really have to go to one or multiple of these brokers and have them do their search for you. So this introduces a number of problems. It's very expensive. So the brokers that we're competing against charge between 30 and 70% markup, which we feel is particularly egregious. And they also do that in a way where it's not apparent to either side of the market. Because of the way they operate, they're also not particularly incentivized to be transparent about the clinician's background or really how good of a clinician that they're giving to a presenting to a particular facility. And just generally, it's a very slow and antiquated process. So my co-founder, Alexi Nazem, who's a doctor, when he would go through this, he would end up faxing like 100 pages of documents back and forth and getting it notarized and, an experience that many doctors that we talk to actively try to avoid. So we're really attacking a number of angles here. We've created a much better product experience on both sides. We've let, for the first time, clinicians and facilities contract and talk to each other directly rather than through a middleman, and we're saving both sides a lot of money.
So what's driving the demand for the temporary doctor? I mean, maybe I understand the temporary nurse situation, but temporary doctors, what's behind the demand?
Yeah, so it's important to keep in mind that $15 billion is a huge market and a great one to go after, but healthcare is enormous, so it is a small percentage of how the system works. So on the doctor side, it's really all over the place. There's a number of reasons. There may be someone who has to leave, just the hospital scheduling has issues with their current doctors going on vacation or maternity leave, or someone leaves unexpectedly. We've talked to hospitals that use locum tenens to start a strategic initiative. So, for example, if you wanted to try out a bariatric center for a year, rather than hiring those surgeons full-time immediately, you do something like locums to perm and see how the venture goes. There are hospitals that have seasonal leaves. So the example we use is if you're a hospital near a ski resort, you're going to have a lot more volume in the winter than otherwise. The largest trend to talk about, though, is everyone talks about a doctor shortage, and not enough people talk about the doctor geographic imbalance. So there are tons of doctors, really good specialists in urban areas, New York, San Francisco, Boston, but not nearly enough of them sort of spread across the country. And so we find a lot of facilities actually turn to locum tenens to gain that specialization, at least on a rotating or part-time basis.
So this is physically doctors traveling to those geographies and performing service versus practicing telemedicine, yes?
That's correct. NOMAD as a company also works with some telemedicine companies, but locum tenens and in general temporary staffing when talked about in the medical space is talking about on-site clinicians.
So the labor pool, so we looked at the demand side. Let's go to the supply side. Are there clinicians that make it their full-time practice of being freelance doctors and nurses? Do they string together gigs like other gig workers do?
Yeah, it is more common on the nursing side, but we work with plenty of doctors that are sort of full-time locums individuals. So as a doctor, you're generally earning a higher hourly wage, and some people just kind of like the lifestyle. But there's also plenty of doctors using locum tenens to earn extra income. For example, if you're coming out of residency, it's pretty common to take on that additional workload. Doctors use it to ease into retirement, to relocate for a period of time. It's really across the board.
Interesting. So let's dig into some of the mechanics of getting NOMAD off the ground. As with any marketplace or matchmaker, you need to satisfy the supply and demand side. As you were thinking about building NOMAD, obviously you needed both, but where did you start? Did you start by tapping into institutions and their requirements for these healthcare professionals, or did you begin by aggregating the pool of professionals to then take to institutions?
So it's a two-sided marketplace, which is always really tough at the beginning to build up that critical mass of liquidity. We started pretty evenly on both sides. We focused on the Northeast, launching in a couple of states. But for any facility we went to, we tried our best to handle their placements for any kind of doctor. And then similarly, in targeting doctors, we've had individuals from all over the country sign up. The industry as a whole is a bit concentrated in three specialties, in internal medicine, emergency medicine, and psychiatry. So we've also been paying particular attention to those areas.
Do you have some of the same challenges with density in a geography that other matchmakers have? I mean, I think about restaurants and reservations where not having the requisite amount of restaurants that can provide seats to diners who want to go to dinner in Boston or New York is a problem if you have capacity in Chicago. Do you have the same sorts of geographic constraints?
We do. We do think of it as we're serving a collection of mini markets. So to get into why that's the case, particularly for doctors, doctors have to have a state license to practice in that particular state. And that's not like a lawyer. There's no test or board involved, but you do have to go through an application process, which takes, a couple weeks at certain times. So in general, when we onboard a doctor, they have a set number of state licenses already, and we find that most of their matches are coming without expanding beyond their state licensure currently. So even if we have thousands of doctors, we may only have 1,000 or 2,000 in a particular state.
Do you find that the institutions reach out and want the same doctors to fill in on a temporary basis? Is the institution's need consistent enough that they get the same doctors or nurses on a regular basis to fill in the holes, or is it not how this market works?
So it's more common if we place a doctor at an institution for, say, a month, and they really like her, to do what's called locums to perm, which is to then activate a clause in the contract where they join as a permanent member of their staff.
Got it. And how often does that happen?
For us, I actually, maybe about 30% of the time. Numbers are still, you know, we're still an early company. But we see more and more facilities using that technique to grow their permanent pool.
Interesting. So that leads me to a couple of other questions. So then it doesn't bother you that, I mean, it's not disintermediating you when that happens. There's a business model in place that provides you with compensation for that placement in the event that something like that happens. Is that an accurate assumption?
Yeah, so the way the industry as a whole works is there's typically a percentage fee of the doctor's hourly rate when they're a contract worker, and then if you end up hiring them permanently within normally 1 or 2 years, there's an activation fee. And so we mirror that structure, but we're generally about half as expensive as our manual competitors.
Got it. Let's talk a little bit about something you touched on, which is the rules and the regulations. So clearly there are the board requirements and all of the things that I would imagine you need to pay attention to. But how far do you go at vetting the qualifications of the professionals you place? Is there a rating system or a ranking system or some other quality imprimatur that you place on these professionals that institutions can rely on?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because we are fundamentally a marketplace, but we're also very much in the trust and safety business, like many other marketplaces out there. So we have a level of a background check and healthcare sanctions checks that we do for our doctors. In addition to that, there's a whole process called credentialing, which is sort of regulatorily mandated for all healthcare institutions. And because of that, in most cases, we can't do that full check on behalf of the facility. They're going to have to do it themselves as well. So we try to facilitate the information they need to do that check as easily as possible. And as we grow as a company, we will also do our best to do that on behalf of some of our smaller clients. But in general, hospitals have pretty stringent guidelines and require it to do themselves.
Healthcare is an area, as we discussed before the show, that is really evolving itself and becoming more complicated, but also, you know, tremendous cost pressures on the system. Do you see this part of the healthcare business, even though $15 billion is a big market today, it's certainly, to your point, it's a small percentage of the overall healthcare market. Do you see this type of practice expanding as hospitals and other institutions look to provide capable service and professionals, but looking to maintain a different cost structure?
Yeah, I think there's two ways to answer that. So one is that many facilities we talk to are often loath to think about locum tenens or contract work simply because it is so expensive. And one of the beauties of our model is we can really hopefully change people's mind about that by being significantly cheaper than the market in general. The second way to answer that question is in most cases, clinicians are the scarce resource. So it actually comes down to them and kind of the professional experiences and the lifestyle that they want to have. So we definitely see, in general in society, a growing trend towards freelance work. And in particularly in hospital medicine, which is one of the main areas for locum tenens, there's been a real increase in doing this kind of work, especially for younger doctors out of residency. So I don't think anyone thinks it's going to become how the vast majority of healthcare works, but we definitely see it growing.
I was going to ask, we've talked a lot about the doctor side of the market you serve. Describe if there are any differences when you're talking about nursing staff, because to your point, there's a doctor shortage, but we often hear about the nursing shortage as well.
Yeah, so NOMAD launched for doctors about a year ago, and we just launched for nursing about 2 weeks ago, so I can't back this up with as much experience or data. But travel nursing is a bit more established of a career path for nurses than for doctors. So it's a much higher volume business. It's a much more standardized business around the types of contracts and the types of work and length of work that nurses will do. So we're excited to get into that and to make a difference there as well.
When we define institution, there are a lot of institutions that need doctors, so hospitals obviously being a big one. Is that the primary institution that you serve, or are there others that are beginning to tap into this platform and this demand as well?
Yeah, so we can sort of classify the facilities we work with as hospitals, telemedicine providers, as I mentioned before. Our urgent care centers are actually a really rapidly growing part of our customer base, as well as just how, you know, particularly urban healthcare works as well.
You've been at this now for a year and 3 days, you mentioned. Happy anniversary, a bit belatedly. But what have you learned about the business and about scaling the platform over that period of time?
Oh man, that's a pretty big question. So I think the biggest lesson I sort of already touched on, where this is a ton of small marketplaces stitched together by licensure, by type of clinician, by type of specialty for the doctor. So it's even more critical and important to engage the liquidity that we have. Because we are not able to rely on a single big pool for any job or for any doctor. It's a smaller universe of possibilities out there, and I think we're doing a great job of it, but it's an extra added pressure to the concept of achieving critical mass.
Mm-hmm. What would you consider to be your competition? I mean, it sounds like there's an established process that's paper-based, archaic, and quite expensive. Is that the primary source of competition, or is it the more established, practice structure that doctors seek in particular to become a part of?
No, we are directly in competition with hundreds of other brokers. As I mentioned before, there's a couple real big ones like CHG or Jackson or AMN, and then just the long tail of smaller shops doing what we do. We're definitely the first people to really do a product-first, internet-first, disintermediated model, and we really think we can provide a better experience and savings to the entire market.
So the difference in your ability to manage your cost structure is what?
So those firms we're competing against are sort of call centers. There are very high number of people per placement and per doctor. They're generally working manually. It's much more based on relationships. There's a lot of parallels to how, recruiting worked for the world at large before LinkedIn. And LinkedIn did an amazing job for a huge percentage of the market. There will always be recruiters for those really high value customers, or someone's willing to pay extra, but we see ourselves becoming that platform for the locum tenens industry.
Does your labor supply multi-home in that they are also part of these other brokers that are trying to place talent?
Yeah. So the good and the bad thing about our ability to grow on both sides is, doctors can often work with other brokers. We have a lot of doctors come to us and say, finally, I don't have to work with the broker anymore, so we assume they cut those ties. On the facility side, we slot in essentially as a broker to those facilities, so it's already very common to work with multiple brokers on a particular job need. None of those relationships or contracts are exclusive. And the benefit of that is we have a really incredible sales and onboarding process, but we're also not locked in. We still have to perform on any single placement to keep the facility and the hiring manager engaged and on our side.
So I mean, clearly with any two-sided market, as we talked about, you need both sides. But as you think about the side you need more, is it more important to you to get the loyalty of the practitioner or the loyalty of the institution that says, I want to use you because you make it simpler for me, and you therefore in turn use that as a recruiting tactic for the healthcare professionals you're bringing into the platform? I know it's a nuanced question, but I'm just trying to get to the essence of where are you spending more of your time cementing relationships with whom you perceive to be your key stakeholder?
Yeah. So obviously both are critical. The way the market dynamics currently, and I think probably forever, are that clinicians, and particularly good clinicians, good doctors, are the scarce resource. So keeping them loyal and engaged to us is crucial, because they can go any number of other places. Ultimately, the facilities are the ones that often have a time-sensitive or desperate need and are willing to branch out and try us if we can perform for them. That's a slightly different answer from kind of the second part of your question, where are we spending more time building relationships? The ratio of doctors we have to facilities we have is very, very different. We can onboard thousands of doctors without any handholding or contracts or anything like that. And in general, they tend to be better users. They're better at using the product. So we spend a lot of time automating and building a platform where they're in control and they don't actually need our help. They can turn to us if they need it. But the experience they want is control and flexibility. Versus with facilities, this is often someone in the HR department or the recruiting department that has more than one job, in the sense that they're not just doing this full time. So we also spend a lot of time building those relationships, working with that individual on a bit more of a manual basis.
So keeping the good talent, which is the scarce resource, loyal is creating efficiency and giving them control by having really more of a self-service experience than perhaps your competition provides. Is that pretty much the secret sauce?
Yeah, so it's a little extraordinary to think about, but if you're a doctor and you're interested in finding a contract job, there is nowhere for you to go to find that temporary placement. You have to call up a broker and do a phone interview with them and send your CV and go through a number of hoops before you even know what could be out there for you. And that's really frustrating, because you probably have to do that at two or three places. And once you do that, they have your phone number, they're going to call you forever. And that's very well known within the doctor, among doctors. And so they're very reticent to do that. Versus us, we spend a ton of time on our product making sure that we are not sending them spam, we're only sending them jobs that they're actively interested in, really trying to cater to their interests versus being a broker pressuring them to take something for the sake of taking it.
Interesting. It's a fascinating business. You mentioned that you get a lot of inflow from residents that are looking to establish themselves. Is that a big part of your recruiting effort for talent?
It is, yeah. It's a pretty common phenomenon at this point. So when you're a resident, you are very locked into your schedule and you're very, very overworked. And as soon as you become an attending, you gain a bit more flexibility and free time. But you're also pretty deeply in debt and very often starting a family, and more willing to do that extra work. And so that class of doctor is typically in the doing look-intends in addition to their full-time job kind of individual, versus the lifelong or career-long attendance doctors that we talked about before.
Got it. So in the time that we have left, I always like to get the perspective from those building these businesses for themselves, who they take inspiration from. I mean, you mentioned LinkedIn as a powerful platform that has disrupted the recruiting process. But are there other matchmaker platforms that you've taken inspiration from? I know we chatted about your experience as an investor with a VC where you had a bird's eye view of the complexity and challenges of getting these matchmakers off the ground. Any established matchmakers that you say, boy, they've done this particular aspect of their job very well, and we should take that as a lesson on board?
Yeah, so I often use LinkedIn because it's known by everyone, but to drill down a little more, I consider LinkedIn to be kind of a first generation online network or online marketplace. So they were the first ones to just connect everyone professionally. And so it's a great product to find people and to sort of reach out to them and talk. There's a reason that didn't take hold enough in healthcare in particular, and a big reason why there's an opportunity for us. So it's not enough simply to connect people. There's a ton of very specific functions that we serve for healthcare professionals. So helping with the licensing, credentialing, an application process, malpractice, healthcare sanctions checks, that's very specific to our market. And so because of that, we looked at similar markets, which sort of by necessity are in generally more technical areas. So an example of that would be the Work Market, which is a online marketplace for on-site labor, tending towards technical labor like IT professionals. And similarly, they're a second-generation product in the sense that they own the entire, they productize the entire transaction process in a way that LinkedIn or more general marketplaces have not.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think you make a good point. There's value in drilling into a market where specialization is required by the buyer, and the supplier is looking for those buyers who know that they need it, and there are specific things that the platform needs to do to bring those players together. Well, it's a fascinating look at a matchmaker that will clearly play an important role in healthcare as it evolves, and we wish you the best of luck going forward, and happy anniversary again. Look forward to keeping in touch as you roll out the platform to more facets of the healthcare market. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you again.
Thanks, Xander, and everyone who listened, thanks for joining us today. We'll see you next time. Have a good rest of the day. Thank you.